Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
There he is, the voice of reason, as Joe said, the voice of the NBA on TNT, the voice of the NFL on CBS.
Does it all.
The voice of me slam dunking a basketball in like a 6-foot hoop. And that, of course, is the great Ian Eagle. Ian, how are you?
What's up, Ian? It is great to be with you guys on a Friday, Wednesday, Tuesday, whatever day it is. It's great to be with you.
I got to ask you this. First question I got to throw at you, and I don't remember if this was you or not, but we had the X-Man on the other day, Xavier McDaniel.
Sure.
And X-Man had a classic interview way back when, sometime in the 90s. He might have still been on the Knicks. It might have been right after he left the Knicks or whatever. And for some reason, I thought you were the guy that interviewed him on The Fan. And he had, like, one F-bomb after another. Was that you? No, he did. Was that you? That wasn't you.
Man, I don't think it was me, but he was then on the Nets after that.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that on the team bus, there were a lot of F-bombs.
Right. Okay.
I'm sure.
I got to find out who did that interview, because I remember it, but maybe it was Summers. I mean, I don't know, but I know that, you know, that's what that was like every other, you know, descriptive adjective was that.
And he did a great job. He never cursed once,
I don't think, when he was
on with us.
No, he was good. He was good, too. He was a good spot.
What year did you start on radio with the Nets, Ian?
I started 1994.
So you got to witness and be the road announcer facing Michael Jordan a handful of times, including that 98 series, which was sort of remembered on the documentary over the weekend.
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of interactions with Michael Jordan as an opposing broadcaster? What was your experiences, if any, with the great Michael Jordan?
Real interesting you bring it up, because when I got the Net job, my radio partner was Mike O'Korin, North Carolina Tar Heel, and a wonderful guy who eventually became an assistant coach. And then
Jersey City High School star as well.
Yep. He and Jim Spinarkle played on the same high school team. Yep. So Mike hosted Michael Jordan at his visit at North Carolina in Chapel Hill. That was his host.
Wow.
When Mike was wrapping up his career, Jordan was visiting UNC, and there was a bond between the two of them because of that, and I think there was just a North Carolina bond for all of these guys through the years that played under Dean Smith. So I get the job on radio. Michael, if you remember that year, obviously was out of commission for half the year. Then he comes back, and a couple of things that I remember. One, O'Korin, the next year, said, hey, do you want to meet Michael? I was like, yeah, I'd love to meet him. So we go to Chicago. He brings me back. All those rooms that you see on The Last Dance, that's where he brought me. And I got to hang with him for like 10 minutes in a setting where Michael was very loose because his buddy Mike O'Korin was there. They're talking North Carolina. And it was really a great experience. My son was born in 1996, and Mike O'Korin, I had moved to TV at that point, says, hey, you want to get a pair of little baby Air Jordans, and I'll have Michael sign them for you. I'm like, yeah, I'll do that. So I bought a little baby pair, brought them with me, went to Chicago, same deal, brought me to the back area, and Michael signed them for me. Could not have been nicer, could not have been more magnanimous. So now, fast forward, and I don't know if it was the playoff series. It may have been. I'm working with Bill Raftery, and we're waiting for the bus after what I believe was game one. And the way that the bus was set up at the United Center is the bus would park just outside the United Center. There would be two buses in the playoffs, one for staff, one for players. So the players would get on the bus inside United Center, and then the staff would go outside, and we're just waiting for the bus. So we're standing there. O'Korn is there. Bill Raftery is there. And this beautiful sports car pulls up. And who is it? It's Michael Jordan. And he rolls down the window, and he starts yelling out, "Hey, O'Korn, O'Korn!" And we all go up to the window, we say hello, and you know, O'Korn's feeling good about himself because Michael Jordan stopped, and he just speeds away. And then another car comes up, and the window rolls down, and the guy's screaming, "Hey, Raf, Raf!" And it's Dickie Simpkins. So we go up to the car, Raf, "Hey, Dickie, how you doing, Dickie?" And Dickie Simpkins stops, pulls away. And Raph now comes back to the group, and obviously, what's the next thing that we say? We're like, "Dude, Michael Korn got Michael Jordan to stop."
Right.
Raph, you got Dickie Simpkins to say, "Hey, babe." And that was the end of that.
Wow. So you were so you actually were tight with Jordan. Let's be honest.
You made that leap.
Now, wait a minute. I got to ask you this question, though. Those sneakers that he signed, the little, you know, the when your son was just born, you got to still have those, right?
Yeah, we have them. Absolutely, 100%.
That's a classic. That's got to go up in the, you know, somewhere, right?
Yeah, no, I'll use it in the background of my next Zoom interview.
You should.
Absolutely.
Or the other option is, if we don't have sports for 2 more years, you could sell it, make a fortune off of it.
I know. Joe, what would you be willing to pay for that?
No, you can't sell it.
No, I'm kidding.
I don't want it. I mean, don't you know, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Put it right next to my picture of Charles Smith? What am I going to do? I don't have
you
a picture.
You got to relive that, didn't you?
I don't have a picture of Charles Smith, but you know what I'm saying. I'll put it next to my Patrick Ewing fat head. That'll work.
Right. That's funny. We're talking to the great Ian Eagle. What did you in 1998, I remember just being excited that the Nets were actually in the playoffs, and remember they made it last game of the season, all that. Going into that series, I mean, my expectations were, hey, you never know. Steal game one. Things may get interesting. And they almost did. I mean, that's the crazy part about that game one. And Keith Van Horn is sick, and Jason Williams is hurt, and Sam Cassell is like nowhere to be found. And yet they actually almost stole game one of that series against the Bulls.
Yeah, they outplayed them in game one. And I remember I'm doing the game with Raph, and late in that game, Dick Stockton and Hubie Brown were doing the national telecast. They were on the other side of the court. And I don't know if Stockton was looking over, and you know, Raph was making hand motions like it may happen. And late in the game, I looked at Bill thinking, the Nets are going to be up 1-0 in this series. Like, this is hard for me to fathom. And at that point, it was my first taste of the playoffs. You know, I got the job in 94. They had not made the playoffs until that point with Calipari in his second year. And then Kerry Kittles had the ball stolen away. Mm. The Bulls streak down the floor, get the bucket, Nets end up losing in overtime. Game two was actually fairly close. That was an NBC game, so we didn't even stay in Chicago as it ended up. I think we ended up flying home the next day. And then game three at the Meadowlands, never really thought the Nets were going to win the game.
I was at that game. They never were really in that game at all.
No, the Bulls kept them at arm's length throughout. And you just had the feeling that, you know, Chicago knew they were ready to sweep. But with that said, similar to when Washington played the Bulls in the first round and gave them a little bit of a fight with Weber and Howard, there was a general feeling that, oh, you know, the Nets are on the right track. They're pushing the right buttons. And obviously the bottom dropped out after that with the lockout. And that ended John Calipari and ended that whole setup that the Nets had. They completely rebuilt at that point, and they went through some very lean years.
No doubt about it. Talking to the great Ian Eagle. So 26 years for you doing net games. I didn't realize it's been that long.
I know. It's insane.
So let me ask you. So you are the announcer. You know, I was, to me, the most important, and Evan and I have talked about this a million times, the most important net game in the history of the franchise to me is certainly in the NBA years, is the game five of the first round in 0-2 against
100%.
The Pacers. And I am at this game, Reggie Miller again at the end, and just one of the great games. And I'm a Knicks fan, but I'm sitting there, man, and the Nets, I'm saying to myself, man, the Nets have to win this game. They got to win this game. So you were doing that game. Give me your thoughts as that is unfolding in that particular game five.
Yeah, heart palpitations at one point, because to see what we all thought was going to be this breakthrough for the franchise possibly come to a crashing halt when Reggie Miller makes the half-court shot. And then in overtime, Miller has a huge dunk, and you think to yourself, okay, this is unfortunately the way it's going to be. Reggie Miller and the Pacers are going to figure out a way to win this game, and then Jason Kidd just took over. He had a number of isolations with Ron Mercer, if memory serves, and Mercer would later play for the Nets. But on this particular day, Kidd willed the team to victory in that second overtime. And little did we know, Bill Raftery, that ended up being his last year broadcasting Net games. So for Bill and I, it ended up being pretty emotional looking back on it, and more so for him. He had been doing the games 20 plus years. The Nets were finally relevant. People actually cared, even though it was fleeting. It was just a few years over that stretch, but they had to win that series. They had to. It was the last year of 3 out of 5. They were the one seed. Everybody thought they were a hollow one seed, and for them to come through the way that they did, and then to go on that run and go to the finals, getting swept by the Lakers, but at the very least, there was credibility. And for Jason Kidd and the rest of that group, they earned it. They had really good chemistry, and they were playing this beautiful style, this up and down. It was so fun to call the action for that team. They were flying up and down the floor. Kenyon Martin at his best, in my mind, and the way Kittles fit in, and Van Horn playing at a high level. That just
Richard,
was
don't
such
leave
a
Richard
fun
out.
Team.
Get mad at you.
RJ,
boy,
RJ. I mean, RJ is a rookie. RJ is a rookie who had all this raw talent.
Right.
And it was Kidd who was the maestro, who just made it all work. And he harnessed it. It was incredible. It was a ridiculous metamorphosis. To see what they were a year earlier to what they became that year was pretty extraordinary.
Remarkable. It was remarkable. One of the great turnarounds you'll see. And it's funny, watching the Jordan documentary, but also just reminiscing about some old NBA games, it's made a lot of people miss the style of play. I'll tell you one thing I've missed, and based on the last two things we talked about, it has it in common, and that's the best of five in the first round. I miss that because, especially, not the Net Pacer one, but in the Nets Bulls one, if you steal a game one on the road, there's this feeling of, oh my God, it could happen. We don't have that feeling anymore in a best of seven. I mean, if the 8 seed wins a game one on the road, it's like, okay, great, that's a shock, that's a surprise, but you still have such a long way to go. And I think moving it in 03 to best of seven has taken that element away a little bit, that Russian roulette feel to what the first round used to be in the NBA. Do you miss it the way I do?
Yeah, I do. I do, and that's a fair way to put it. I think there was a sense of urgency with every game in a best of five. You know, go back, Joe can talk about this. It was 2 out of 3 at one point, really, now that wasn't fair. That certainly was not a fair way.
Very precarious, yes.
Yes, very much so. 3 out of 5 felt, to me, like a more fair compromise to having intrigue, but also if you're the better team, most of the time you would figure out a way, even in a 3 out of 5. Look, the 4 out of 7 happened for a number of reasons. Financially, it changed the playoff setup because it created more games. And at the gate, it gave owners a chance to make more money because these were playoff games and they were a premium. So I understand why it happened, but I would agree with you, Evan. I think the 3 out of 5 brought just a little different edge to it. And that game one, and the Nets lost game one, if you recall, against Indiana. And that's why there were a lot of people that right after that first game stuck with their initial instinct and perception that, the Nets aren't a very good number one seed. They'll probably get beat by Isaiah Thomas's Indiana Pacers. So for the Nets to figure it out and problem solve and make adjustments and then play their style, it was impressive. And I'm with you. I think the 3 out of 5 definitely brought this other dynamic that we no longer have.
You know, the other game, and again, we're talking to the great Iron Eagle, the other game that jumps out at me from the Nets, they won the game. They won the battle and lost the war.
Oh, was God.
Game 5, the Brian Scalabrine game against the Pistons in 04 after they swept the Knicks in the Fugazi series, as I like to call it, with Tim Thomas and Kenyon Martin. You know, he was a real tough guy calling out Kenyon Martin when he didn't even play the next game. But nevertheless, they win that game, and Kidd was just never the same after that, and they lose game 6 and 7 to the Pistons. How about that one, Ian?
Yeah, a couple things I've learned about that. RJ has filled me in. Jason Kidd, even if they won that series, I'm not sure he would have been able to go on.
Really?
He was injured. Yeah, he was injured.
Right, right.
And I'm not sure that he could have competed at the level that it would have required. So while the Pistons went on to win a championship,
yes,
and we understand that for Detroit, it ended up being a coronation, I don't know if that Nets group could have gotten to the finish line, certainly without Jason Kidd, but the more that I've heard about it, it doesn't appear that Jason Kidd could have been himself. So Game 7, maybe that changes the way you view it. They got crushed in Detroit, and we got to do that game locally. I remember on Yes, Kelly Trepuka and I are set up to do it, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this could be one of the biggest broadcast moments of my career. And within the first 10 minutes of real time, I realized this thing was done. They were not going to be able to compete. The Scalabrine game, that was a national game, so we didn't get to do that game. And I remember exactly where I was watching that game and watching that thing unfold. And for Brian, it really did make his career. Financially, it made his career. It showed that he was a valid player. He wasn't just some sideshow. And he ended up having success beyond that with the Celtics and with the Chicago Bulls. But as the story goes, and I think Scalabrine would even tell you this story, that season ends, Scalabrine is a free agent, and he and Rod Thorne had grown very close. They'd become friendly. Rod had a great way with the players. He just had the perfect balance of being their boss, but also getting to know them on a personal level and creating that connection. So Scalabrine has an offer, 5 years, $15 million as a free agent. But he loves being in New Jersey, and he loves being a Net. So he goes into Rod's office, not even with an agent, from what I understand. He just went in there to talk man-to-man, and he wants to stay in New Jersey. So he sits down, and Rod sits down across the table, and Brian says, Rod, I got this offer, 5 years. $15 million. And Brian just wants Rod to tell him, oh, man, we love you. We're going to keep you. And Rod stands up, extends his hand, and says, Brian, you got to take that deal. Well, good luck to you. And I'm cleaning it up. There was word or two in there that may have been interjected. But Scalabrine walked out of there, and he had a new team with a new contract.
Now, Ian, I want you
by the
to
way,
very...
I just to jump in a second. Yeah. In that game 7 in Detroit, didn't Kidd go 0 for 10 or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
He couldn't make a shot.
In that
he was
game.
Done. That game was over 5 minutes in. It reminded me of the clincher against the Sixers a year ago.
I remember watching that game in the studio. I think I was still doing my last year doing the overnights, and I remember watching that game, and he just had nothing.
It was awful. I made an awful decision that night. I was down in Florida. I was moving my sister down to Florida, and I went to a buddy's house who lived down there, and I watched that game with a Piston fan. Oh, my God. Five minutes in, I wanted to leave. Oh, it was brutal. Ian, Joe is probably not aware of this. He's not on Twitter. But a couple of weeks ago, Ian, you know, made an innocuous comment. I think it was with Mike. An innocuous comment about Kevin Durant. And Nets Daily picked up on it. Net fans on Twitter started going nuts that basically Iron Eagle says Kevin Durant is coming back. He's going to play this season. So what the heck is going on? Because now Woj says it's not happening. Marks won't talk to us, but he's talking to guys in New Zealand. He says, hey, you never know. It's a $110 million question. What's going on? If the NBA season...
in New Zealand? I mean, come on.
If the NBA season restarts, Ian, just say it. Is Kevin Durant going to play or not?
Yeah, that's a great question. No one has actually asked me that particular question. The only questions that have been asked about Kevin Durant are how is he doing physically? And the answer for anyone that has been around him and has watched a little bit of the video and has been privy to some information behind the scenes is that he's doing great physically. He's absolutely where they were hoping that he would be at this point, at this juncture. Now, look, we have to understand that the way that things are set up now, this is no longer the norm. We're not dealing with normal set of circumstances. So we have no idea if the NBA is even going to play. So before we start answering any questions, will Kevin Durant be back? We have to know, what's the NBA season look like? What kind of ramp up will there be? Is there 3 weeks of training camp? Is there a month for these guys to get back into shape? All of these questions have to be put into the equation. The only person that can answer is Kevin Durant coming back at any point is Kevin Durant. Kevin doesn't have to answer these questions because there is no season. And in fact, they have certainly downplayed everything because there's no reason to answer them.
Right.
There's no reason to put pressure on Kevin Durant to answer that. We don't know what the season is going to be. I just know the math. And the math is that Kevin Durant last played almost a year ago. We're talking about closing in on 1 year when the injury took place in the NBA Finals. If indeed he does not play, if the NBA resumes, that probably means that he would not play in a game of meaning until December.
Mm.
You're talking about nearly 18 months later.
Well,
18 months. So Kevin Durant ultimately has to make the decision. The Nets are not in a position to evaluate him right now. There's no visits with the medical staff. There's no visits with the training staff. Nothing. Nothing is happening on that front. But like every other NBA player that may have to face what this is going to be, the new normal, KD is going to have to determine whether or not this is something that he wants to consider or if this is something that is off the table entirely. Yeah, part of the thought process, guys, is also, I don't know if Kevin Durant wants to come back without Kyrie Irving. There might be a feeling between the two of them of, hey, when it's time to do it, we're going to do it together. And Kyrie Irving, we don't quite know what's going on with his shoulder either.
No one asks that question. No one asks about, hey, how's Kyrie doing? Is he going to play? That's forgotten about. Here's the question.
So I understand. I understand what Woj said in a podcast the other day, and it was almost a throwaway at the end of some other segment. And the information that's been out there from day one is Kevin Durant is not playing this season. But this is no longer what it once was. We've now entered into a completely different conversation based on the fact that we don't know what the NBA season is going to look like.
Can I ask you that? Because, and Joe and I have talked about this, about, hey, how long can you wait if you're the NBA before you say, blanket, there is no season? I really want them to crown a champion, and it truly has nothing to do with the Nets being in the playoffs or not. I think it's important, if you can, obviously, safely,
I agree,
crown a champion. How long would you be willing to wait? Are you cool with the playoffs starting in September, or is that just too much of a wait? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've heard both sides of this. I think the NBA, from a financial standpoint, certainly wants to try to resume. I think they look at the circumstances. Let's take LeBron James as an example. We're celebrating the career of Michael Jordan and celebrating everything that he accomplished. Michael Jordan willingly took himself out of the mix when he made the decision to step away. LeBron James continues to play. And I think the NBA would like to give their superstars a chance to complete the season and not just pull the plug. And I think just from the perception of how sports plays a role in our country, to step away and just say, we're done, we can't figure out any way to make it work, That doesn't do anybody any good. And that's why the NBA has considered everything. Everything that's been on the table, everything that has been talked about has been considered by the league. And they're trying to figure out the best way to pick up the action if it's feasible. So I don't think that the NBA is putting a date on it just now, saying if we don't have a plan in by this particular date, we're done. But they certainly have contingencies in place, and I can guarantee you that the hierarchy in the NBA is taking every opportunity possible to construct the game plan to resume. And only if they can keep their players and their staff members healthy and do this in a way that is acceptable. And I do think they care about the optics. They do. It would be easy to say, hey, we'll just test every player every single day, and that's the end of that. They care about how the rest of society is being treated and how they're being handled. They recognize their place in the bigger picture. So it's not cut and dry. It's not simple. It's not snap your fingers. I think the NBA truly is trying to do the right thing here and trying to figure out the best way to resume if it's even possible at this stage.
Again, talking to the great Iron Eagle. All right, so you got a new partner in football. You got Charles Davis now. Dan Fouts is out. Charles Davis is your new guy in the NFL. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Charles is a great guy. I just spoke with him literally half an hour ago. I've talked to him three or four times since the announcement was made. We're actually doing some Zoom things just so we can see one another. Evan Washburn was with us today as well, just to chat, just to get to know each other more than anything else, not even talking football or talking specifics about broadcasts, just chatting. So when you get on the air, people say, well, where's the chemistry? How does that happen? It happens when you get to know the person,
right,
and when you find some common ground and commonality. So that's been important. Look, the Dan part of it, that's hard for me. Dan and I grew very close, 10 years on the air together in network years. That's like an eternity when you're not the number one team. When you get a chance to work with the same person for 10 years and you're not considered the top group, that just doesn't usually happen. Normally, networks will tinker and make changes here and there and change the play-by-play guy or shift around the analyst. So Dan and I are extremely close. We talk every couple of days. It's disappointing on a personal level because of how much I like him and how much I enjoyed working with him and how good I think he is. But on the flip side, it's a new challenge and it's going to be fun. Charles is really talented, highly prepared, and knows his stuff and likes to have fun on the air. So I think it's going to be a smooth transition, and let's just hope that we have games to call and
yeah,
we get to call the schedule that was released last week.
Sure. You know,
I've tempered my excitement level in normally this time of year. I'm completely engrossed in where I'm going to be and what game I might be calling week one, week two, week three. And I've taken a little bit of a step back until we get more clarity on how all of this is going to go in the NFL. They have their own set of problems that they have to deal with and challenges.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I want something very exciting to tell you about. Brand new segment. You know how we've done the Bracket of Pain with Beningo? We are going to do with you every single day the Bracket of Iron Eagle Partners. Are you ready for it? Bill Raftery.
Well, before you even go there, can I say this before you start with this? I'm glad you're doing that.
I'm joking. I'm not really doing that.
But I want to say this about Iron, and it's very, and I don't mean this because it's you, because you know you're on with us now, and because we love you. There's very few play-by-play guys. You know, we talk about like the great players that make everybody around them better. You know, you think about Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, whoever. You know, the guy that makes LeBron, he makes those around him better. And that's one thing about you. I mean, I don't care who the partner is. You could throw that. You could put me there. Okay, which would be a disaster, but you know, you would make me look good as an analyst. So I think that no matter who you put there, okay, and Charles Davis is very good. We have him on a lot.
Yeah, he's
excellent. He knows football.
Yep.
He's tremendous. There's no, but you're one of those guys. You're like Marv. I would put Marv in that category. I don't put a lot of guys in that category. Marv certainly is there, and I put you in that category. That you make whoever that analyst is, you make that guy better. So I don't care who your partner is going to be. that guy will be good because you'll make him good.
Joe, my phone dropped out for the last 45 seconds. If you could just repeat that whole riff.
No, but
I
think Evan agrees with that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when I think of the great announcer, like Marv is, and I know Marv was like kind of, for you, I think growing up with Marv was your guy, whatever, as an announcer.
Oh, very much so.
Right, right. I mean, and Marv, I don't care who the guy was, Marv would get the, I mean, you know, whether it was John Andres, whether it
100%.
Was Butch Beard, I mean, whoever the guy, you know, over all the year, Chris Webber, that he's done games recently with now on TNT.
Sal Red Light Messina.
Right, Sal, right, exactly. Any of these people, he has gotten the best out of him, out of them. And that's what you do. So I don't care who the partner is. The guy's going to do well.
Joe, that's truly the best compliment that you could give me, and I really do appreciate it. That means a lot because I do care about that. That to me is the essence of what we're doing, similar to what you guys do on a daily basis. Your chemistry has formed over time. You've been doing this for so long. Evan can complete your sentences. He knows where you're going. You
right.
understand where Evan's taking a certain topic, and there's this nonverbal communication between the two of you guys. And yeah, look, it's being tested more than ever before because of the situation that we're in and the fact that you're doing sports talk on a daily basis and you're doing it from different locations. And now that's where chemistry really comes through. And for me, that's always been part of the way that I viewed the job is we're going to be looked at as a team. If people aren't enjoying us together, it doesn't matter how well I did or how well you did. If
right.
we're not doing well together, then there's going to be a disconnect with the audience. So Charles is really talented. I thought he and Kevin Burkhart were great together.
Right, right.
It's not going to be a problem. Charles stepping in, doing games for CBS is going to feel comfortable right away. He's that good.
Now take us into the Eagle household. What the heck are you doing with there being no sports? What are you
great
doing?
Great question. I wish I had a really interesting answer that I could detail every waking minute of the day with something that is making me a better person and improving life as I know it. I don't have that answer. I'm filling time. That's what I'm doing.
I got to ask you this now. You're so used to being, you know, you're all over the place. You know, you're here one day, you're in four different cities, five different cities a week. You know, all over the place, you know. I remember once asking, why don't you do baseball? And you basically said, well, you know, I do, you know, I am married. I mean, I would like to see my wife.
I'd like to see my wife
occasionally.
Married.
So now you're home all the time. Now you're home all the time. So now your wife is seeing you every day where she hasn't like this for years. How is that working out?
Yeah, she's encouraged me to do baseball. That's what's happened, basically. No, we get along. We like each other. It's all harmonious in my house. The thing about it that is a little bit of a mind twister is this stretch of time, this is the longest I have slept in my own bed in 26 years, consecutively.
I believe
for 26 years.
I totally believe that.
That's not even debatable. The numbers will back me up. And it's different, but I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed being around my family. I've enjoyed not feeling certain kinds of stress and pressure. But then the flip side of it is you're not working a certain muscle in your brain. And the preparation part is what I really like. I like preparing for the games. I like learning about the athletes. I like getting information and talking to players and coaches and trying to find the best nuggets out there to bring to the public. That part I'm really missing. I'm missing the people more than anything else, the people you work with, the collaborative effort. That part, there's a void.
Well,
there's no doubt about it.
I'll do you a favor, okay, because I love you. And I did this the other day, but I would bequeath it to you. A couple of days ago, a couple of buddies of mine, they're playing MLB The Show, and they asked me to broadcast it. And I broadcasted their baseball game. If you want to take over and become the lead play-by-play guy for Chad versus Adam Eaton in MLB The Show, I think they'd have you. They'd be more than happy to have you, and then you can kind of scratch your itch.
Evan, you know my agent, so if you want to reach out, you can make that call, and then let's see where the chips fall from there.
Yeah,
I've just been full of joy that I got to bring the Evan Roberts basketball experience to the masses.
Yes.
Now, Iron, you did not call the horse game between him and Sal Licata, right?
I would never even insult Iron with that one.
He didn't even text me on that one. I think he knew already that probably wasn't going to go the way that he won. And I love Sal.
Right.
I did watch some of the competition, and it was different. It was unique.
Well, you're used to watching people hit shots while playing basketball.
Right.
And Sal and I could not, so there was a little bit of a difference.
Why were you trying to create shots while in a sitting position when you couldn't make shots from a standing position?
Well, because I didn't create that shot, in fairness. That was a Sal shot where he hit a free throw from his derriere.
He made it,
so I had to take it. So that one can't be blamed on me.
I came very close
to hitting that shot, by the way. Very close.
Very close, yeah.
Yeah. No, trust me, Ian, I get it. I don't want to push the Iron Eagle button too much because then you'll just block me. You know what I mean? Like, I ask you one thing. I can't ask you two or three things because then I'll never hear from you again. I know not to push my limits.
I have many Zoom interviews to do over the course of a day. I'm Zooming left and right. So you can't interrupt a good Zoom.
Of course not. Would never want to interrupt any kind of Zoom, that's for sure. But we do appreciate you coming on today. It's always great talking to you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.